Hello, welcome everybody. Thank you for coming to the wastewater session. My name is Cherie Chastain and I am the sustainability manager at Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, but I also co-chair the Brewers Association Sustainability Subcommittee. The subcommittee, which Walker, who's our moderator for this session, is also a member of the subcommittee. We've put together an entire sustainability track for the conference, and this is the kickoff, the first presentation as part of that track. Wastewater, as I'm hoping everybody in this room knows, it's a big issue for brewers. It's a really big issue for brewers, and it's often very challenging. So we have an amazing lineup of speakers here for you this afternoon. Hopefully we'll shed some light, maybe provide some inspiration for some different wastewater approaches and techniques that you can take within your brewery. I would like to remind you guys that after sessions, there is on the app, you can provide a review for the session. So we'd love your feedback. Was it useful? Was it helpful? What can we do better in the coming years? I would also like to put in a plug for the Sustainability Subcommittee Open House, which is happening tomorrow from 4 to 5. Forgot the room. Yeah, we'll look that up. Walker will look it up. He'll let you know where it's at. But there's also several subcommittees are hosting open houses tomorrow, 4 o'clock. Swing by, meet the committees. There's a safety committee, a quality committee, a draft beer quality committee, and the sustainability committee. So swing by, say hey, have a beer. It'll be a lot of fun. We'll have some prizes, and it'll be a wonderful, good time. So I'd like to introduce your moderator for this session, Walker Modick, who is, as I mentioned, also on the sustainability subcommittee. Walker is sustainability specialist at Bell's Brewery. He is responsible for employee education, waste mitigation, efficient resource utilization, and environmental compliance. Environmental compliance assessment and advocacy. Prior to joining Bell's in 2013, he was head brewer at a small regional brew pub in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Before beginning his career in craft beer, Walker worked at the U.S. EPA National Health and Environmental Effects Research Laboratory, where he received the EPA's award for scientific and technological achievement. He holds an MA in sustainability and environmental management from Harvard and an MS in molecular and structural biochemistry from North Carolina State University. Please welcome Walker. Thank you.
Does everybody know the joke about the secret to a good introduction? Just quit or get fired every 2 years, and then it sounds like you've done a ton by the time you get up here. So I was asked to moderate a panel discussion, and subsequent to that request, we made a decision to dramatically change how we do the presentation membership dynamic. Instead of these gentlemen talking to you for 20 to 30 minutes and then all of you having but 5 minutes to ask questions that are germane to your unique brew house, we're going to flip that around. We're going to ask these guys to, in just 7 minutes each, explain to you their area of expertise and hit on the bullet points as to why their specialties are, you know, important to your unique operations. So that makes my job largely superfluous. So I am going to introduce these gentlemen and largely get out of the way. But I also wanted to take an opportunity to voice an objection about this panel. The name. I find the term wastewater to be a misnomer that really results in a disservice to how we treat that particular stream in the brew house. When you use the word waste as an adjective, that's a material, substance, or byproduct eliminated or discarded as no longer useful or required after a process. And the thing is, who in this room needs money? Who in this room needs water? Who in this room needs electricity or heat to run your brew house? All of us. And if you go about treating the effluent from your process as waste and ignore it as it goes down the drain, you are either assuming the cost associated with surcharges, and you are risking the opportunity cost of generating unique inputs to your process from something you have already paid for once. So please know that when you use the term waste water, you're really using it as waste, the verb, which is defined as to use or expend carelessly, extravagantly, or to no purpose. So these four guys are going to give, hopefully, every unique level of membership an opportunity to take, you know, waste away from how you are treating your process effluent. First up, we're going to have Epa Rixley. He's the strategery guy at Lagunitas Brewing Company. He comes to them with training as a mechanical engineer and a number of years working as a management consultant. We also have John Mercer, the main guy at the brewery Wastewater Design. John actually spent about 12 years at a little neighborhood brew pub here dealing with wastewater. I think you guys pronounce it Deschutes. Maybe the locals have heard of them. But after about 12 years in wastewater there, he took 2 years, circumnavigated the globe on a bike with his wife, and returned to open his own business. Todd Hasselbeck's the vice president of Purpose Energy. Before joining Purpose, he was a clean energy fellow at the New England Institute of Clean Energy and also led the cleanup and restoration of Gorgongosa National Park in Mozambique. I think I got that right. And finally, Tim Renders, project engineer, CDM Smith, with a specialty in design, piloting, and commissioning of water reclamation and treatment facilities. Don't be fooled by Tim. He is really, really smart. He's just also super good looking. Some people just have good luck in life. And with that, I will hand it off to Epa and let the talent take over. Thanks.
Hello, everybody. So I'm going to try and kind of convey to everybody in this room the story arc of how wastewater has impacted the Lagunitas Brewery. Wastewater has actually been a relatively defining aspect of our brewery since day one. The brewery, in a story that's very similar to everybody else in this room, was founded out of pure passion, and location was kind of secondary. Tony was homebrewing in his garage and decided that the small town of Lagunitas, which has about 390 people in it, was the right spot for the brewery. Little did he know that his wastewater would be going into a septic tank system, and when you add fermentables, yeast, and a tank, you end up with shit beer. And we were very quickly kicked out of town. That led to us moving to the town of Petaluma, which had a bit more robust system and infrastructure. So from the very, very get-go, we realized wastewater was an important thing that we had to pay attention to. We kept the name Lagunitas because Tony liked it. On to Petaluma, we were pretty well off when we were a small brewery. When we were in the regional brewery size, 10,000 barrels, 20,000 barrels, we didn't have a lot of problems. However, in 2009, the city of Petaluma rebuilt their municipal wastewater facility, and that happened to coincide nicely with the economic recession. As a result, they pulled out some of the excess digester capacity that they had planned, and then simultaneously, as it always does, the city started growing, and lots of businesses were interested in relocating to Petaluma. This meant they just fundamentally did not have enough digester capacity for us. John is going to give a little more detail on some of these questions to ask your local utility with regards to how much capacity they have, what the surcharges are, that sort of thing. But suffice it to say, about 8 years ago, we ran out of the ability to put wastewater down the drain to them for our highest strength waste. John's also going to go into kind of what high strength waste means, but it was basically the 40% of our wastewater that had the most organic matter in it. We were stuck trucking that wastewater to Oakland. Obviously, this cost added up and escalated over time. This is kind of the growth arc of the brewery. And you can see when we were a smaller brewery, we didn't have as many problems after we got kicked out of town, that is. But then we started getting a lot bigger, and the problems really began. And these costs snowballed very, very quickly. When I came on board with the company about 2 years ago, we were paying $180,000 a month in wastewater fees. 87% of our total water cost was just wastewater. Input water, really cheap. Shouldn't be, given how scarce it is in California, But wastewater was really hammering us, and we really needed to start looking at solutions and ways to take that cost out of our system. We've been looking at it for multiple years, but the big challenge was, how do you size a system when you're growing at this sort of rate? The answer to that became a little easier once we added a brewery in Chicago, because then we knew how big of a brewery we were dealing with in Petaluma. But you go back even as recently as 2013, and we didn't know where the end of growth was in sight for that campus. So it was hard to commit to a large infrastructure project all at once. For relative context as well, this problem varies significantly based on your site. In Petaluma, wastewater is super expensive. We're trucking it to Oakland. In Chicago, 2 months of our wastewater bills in Petaluma would cover the entire year's wastewater bill in Chicago, and that's putting everything down the drain, including Trube and all of the really heavy solids. So what did we do to solve this, and how did we get these trucks off the road? One of the technologies that jumped out at us when we were looking at our different options was a new system from a company called Cambrian. They're an MIT startup out of Boston, and their technology really appealed to us. It was in piloting phase at Clos de Bois, so we were able to go up the road and see it. And Tim is actually going to tell you a little bit more about the piloting process and whether it makes sense for your facility or your technology. But we went up. We were really impressed with their facility. And the solution had a few key advantages for us. It was modular and scalable, which meant that even if we guessed wrong, we could add capacity down the road. It had really high reliability because they have a technology that allows them to remote monitor the reactor to assess its health. It had slightly greater energy output. We could outsource all the operation. I mean, ultimately, we're a brewery. We're not a wastewater company. And being able to put the responsibility of maintaining and running the system on a daily basis to them was really advantageous. And then the last thing was, because it was generating clean energy and burning biogas for energy creation, we were able to get an investment tax credit, which really helped with justifying the overall financial burden. The problems didn't stop there, though. We had a plan in place, but the first thing you've got to do once you have the plan is go talk to the city and figure out what your plan is going to mean for their system. And we found out that even when treating our high-strength waste down to the point where it would meet our sewer permit discharge limits, would still incur massive capacity fees and issues with the city. As a result, we decided, after some deliberation, to go towards an entire water reuse methodology. So we added to the back-end treatment of the high-strength waste, blending in all of our low-strength waste that was currently going down the drain, and treating it with a combination of a membrane bioreactor, also known as an MBR, and a reverse osmosis system, also known as an RO. Todd and Tim are going to go into a little more depth on the different technologies and what those things mean, but ultimately this system is going to enable us to clean about 70% to 80% of our wastewater to the point where we're able to reuse it for non-product applications throughout the brewery. Things like vacuum pumps, cleaning cycles, washdowns. And ultimately, given the drought, this is going to be tremendously beneficial for us because it's going to mean about 40 to 45% savings in water. And our water use ratio, which we've worked on over the years to get down to about 4 gallons of water to 1 gallon of beer going out the door, is going to drop down to about 2.5 gallons to 1 gallon of beer going out the door, which is basically just a gallon to a gallon and a half of wastewater, which is about as good as we can get with the existing infrastructure we have at the brewery. So what does all this mean to you guys? First of all, I'm sure most of the people in this room are here because they're having some sort of an issue with wastewater, or they anticipate one. These issues are completely unique, and there is no one-size-fits-all solution. The solutions are very site-dependent, and the scope of the problem is very site-dependent. But the good news is technologies exist that can solve these problems, and you're going to hear more about some of these technologies from the other panelists. Wastewater can spiral out of control very quickly. You can have significant fines, fees, and you can even have your brewery shut down and be forced to relocate the way that we were. So I hope that this was helpful, showing the story arc of our brewery, and now the other panelists are going to dive into more of the detail behind my presentation. So I'm going to hand it off to John, who's going to dig more into municipalities and wastewater metrics.
Okay, Thanks, Epa. It was cool to hear about the evolution of wastewater there at Lagunitas, and also interesting to hear some of the nightmares that you guys went through. Hi, everyone. My name's John Mercer. I own Brewery Wastewater Design, and I'm going to be up here talking about some basics, some terminology, but then also some solutions for you guys. My target is smaller brewers that are maybe have a brew pub and they're expanding into a production facility, or other people that already have a brewery and are now facing these issues. So jumping right in, and again, I apologize. We're going to have to blow through these slides really, really quick. I'll be down here at the end for the breakout session. Limiting factors. These are what you guys are most commonly going to be faced with. pH. Your brewery wastewater is going to settle out about 4 to 4.5 pH. During CIP, it's going to go up to 12. And you guys will be faced with discharge, potentially with pH limits of 6 to 8 or something like that. BOD, biochemical oxygen demand. This is it's a measure of the nutrients in the wastewater that's going to have to be removed at the wastewater treatment plant. COD is related to BOD. BOD is a 5-day test. COD is a 2-hour test. So since we're all real-life businesses, a 2-hour test is much more representative of what's going on at the brewery. TSS, total suspended solids, that is a measure of the amount of floaties in your wastewater, hop particles, barley particles. It's not dissolved. You know, sugar does not show up in there. Less common to be regulated is these guys up here. Volume is a potential issue, and some places, you know, they even go down to trying to limit your volume per second leaving your brewery. So again, you couple definitions for you. POTW, that's publicly owned treatment works. That's the wastewater plant. Load. It's a factor of wastewater concentration and volume. So imagine you've got a bad keg of beer, dump it down the drain as is, or you got the same bad keg of beer and you dilute it with 1,000 gallons of water. The load is the same. And wastewater people talk about load all the time. So hypothetical situation here. The big deal up there is the yellow. That is the theoretical, you know, capacity at the local wastewater treatment plant. The blue and the orange is residential and commercial capacity at the treatment plant, and then green is this hypothetical brewery. And you can see when the brewery's first built, everything's fine. Brewery starts to grow, and things start to get ugly down the road. So, again, you know, this is potentially a big deal. So you've got to educate yourself. You've got to ask the city some questions. The point is, you know, Learn from Epa's story and learn from what we're all up here telling you. You know, Epa had his nightmares, and I have my own nightmares from when I was at Deschutes, and with the consulting work I do now, I can tell you a dozen more nightmares. So you've got to ask these questions. You know, what's the capacity of your treatment plant, and what's it currently at right now? And as you grow, how's it going to be looking? How are the sewer fees calculated? And surcharges, that's the 800-pound gorilla. How are these guys actually calculated? You gotta know the formula. You've gotta understand it. You can challenge them. If they don't understand that, you'll find that a lot. They don't necessarily understand how these surcharges are calculated, even though they're the regulatory agency. You don't want to be charged sewer fees on water that's leaving your brewery in other forms, like packaged beer, also evaporation, or the water that's in your spent grain. You shouldn't be charged sewer fees, so you can measure your wastewater with a flow meter. Even easier is to come up with a ratio for wastewater. And generally in a brewery, it's 60 to 70% of incoming water winds up leaving in wastewater. What are the testing requirements going to be for your brewery? What do you need to test for? How often do you need to test for it? Who pays? probably be you paying, but again, get the answers. Does the city have a wastewater lab? Can they do your testing for you? Can you do your own testing in-house? Will they trust you? Okay, this is a biggie. Discharge limits. Will you have any? You know, surcharges are one thing. They'll charge you for this excess load coming out of your brewery. That's surcharges. They can be reasonable. They can be excessive, but there's not that they're not necessarily a limit. But you can also be faced with limits for pounds of BOD per day or TSS. That's when things get tricky. Because there are limits, can limit your growth, otherwise you're going to be looking at pretreatment. My objective up here is to kind of, let's cover all of our bases before we have to do pretreatment. So takeaways for asking questions like this, these types of answers, they vary town by town all across the country. There's no one size fits all, and your knowledge base is just going to go up. Avoiding pretreatment. Not all of you want to do pretreatment. Not all of you can afford it. What can you do to lessen your load coming out of your brewery before you have to do pretreatment? So side streaming. This is some low-hanging fruit for you guys. Collect your high-strength material, and this is trube, spent yeast, any waste beer, and separate it, put it in its own tank outside, and haul it off-site in a truck. You can land apply it to pasture, to hay fields, to grasslands. The point is, don't put it down the drain to the sewer. These three things, trube, spent yeast, that we're talking about 75% of your organic load coming out of your brewery is right here. It works. It's simple. It's cheap. It's not free. You're going to have to pay trucking fees on this, and you'll have a permit to maintain. It's easiest to have the actual trucking company, the farmer, or whoever it is, own that permit. Have you exhausted all of your options? Have you thought outside the box? Equalization. So the idea here is you put in a big tank and you spread out your load over 7 days of the week. Diurnal loading. This is sending your wastewater to the sewer overnight when everybody's asleep and there's really not much going on at the wastewater treatment plant. There's a lot of capacity there for you. Does it make more financial sense for the expansion at the local treatment plant instead of at your brewery? They have the staff and the infrastructure already. Last slide here, I get asked all the time about on-site disposal. You know, we're looking at property and we want to put a brewery on septic. Be careful. It can work, but a simple septic system will not work. You heard Epa's shit beer story. So you'll be looking at multiple drain fields, so you don't wind up with a mud pit. Probably some sort of aeration in there as well, but be careful. And that's it. I'll be right here at the end. Thank you.
Good afternoon. So as some of my co-panelists have already introduced, this isn't wastewater. It's about byproducts, and there are values in your byproducts that we think we're going to talk today about how you can extract some of that value and put it back into your bottom line. So your organic material has organic loads, water, and nutrients that all have value. And some of the key to extracting that value we have found is using that high-strength organic material, the yeast, the trube, much as you do brewer's spent grain, and sell that for a profit. Options to treat this include aerobic digestion, anaerobic digestion. We're going to focus today on anaerobic for breweries, which I'm a strong advocate of. But aerobic is another process heavily utilized by POTWs, and it tends to be a technology that requires a large amount of space and pretty high operating costs. So because of the footprint issues and OPEX, it's often not suitable for breweries. Anaerobic digestion, smaller footprint, can be used to totally eliminate the BOD surcharges you've heard about, and you get back valuable heat, power, and potentially water at the end of that process. Done right, installed properly, an anaerobic system can return anywhere from 10 or 12% up to 25% return on investment to the brewery. And we'll go into some case studies on that in a few minutes. It's not complicated either. Think fermentation. Anaerobic digestion is much the same in a closed vessel like a fermentation tank, but the yeast is replaced by bacteria, and instead of producing alcohol, we're producing methane gas or biogas. As a brewer sitting here thinking about what are my options to consider as I grow, John touched on a few of them. Should you consider anaerobic treatment? Well, maybe yes, if any of these apply. And I'm going to jump into this, this corner, front left, as a breakout afterwards. So if any of these apply to you, you might want to follow up and learn more. First and foremost, if you are restricted by organic loads or hydraulic capacity, we'll talk about one case study where that happened. Second, if you're either over about 100,000 barrels a year production or have a 150-barrel brew house or can see that in your future, it might be a good fit. Or if your brewery is spending anywhere near or in excess of $400,000 a year in total wastewater treatment fees, trucking, disposal. Or if you just simply want to have greater control over your process. And the economics tend to be very site-specific. So where you're located, the local energy costs, local water, and wastewater treatment costs have a big impact on your return on investment. This is what an anaerobic digester looks like. It's typically a single vessel with multiple chambers inside that give you separate hydraulic and solids holding time so you can take more time to digest the yeast, the trub, even brewer spent grain in the process, whereas lower strength wastewater can push right through. The designs tend to be pre-assembled in skids and arrive on site for quick installation. And once set up and operating, they have a very low operating expense. Virtually no chemicals because they're naturally balanced if properly sized for pH, and only two continuous duty pumps to keep these running. They're sized, by the way, various size tanks are sized based on the combination of hydraulic load and organic load that the brewery is creating. So two case studies. We're going to first look at Magic Hat, which is a brewery up in Burlington, Vermont. Magic Hat a few years ago ran into a problem which, due to rapid growth, they actually hit that discharge cap that John talked about. The wastewater treatment facility in their town came in and said, no more. You cannot send us more than so many thousands of pounds of BOD, and that's it. The problem was they had a lot of orders to fill for beer, and they had the ability to brew a lot more. So they were in a real quandary. We put in an anaerobic system there about 4.5 years ago. That's allowed them to double the capacity of their brewing without paying, at this point, a penny for BOD surcharges. Their byproduct handling charges have dropped by 60% with the installation of this. And the economics at this site, due to some pretty attractive power pricing and some very high surcharges, made the project attractive enough that Purpose Energy invested the CapEx to build the plant. So it's known as a BOOM, or build, own, operate, and maintain model, where Purpose Energy built that, runs it, and we do a sharing of the revenues that come out of the plant. And that system generates enough power to run basically a third of the brewery's electricity needs. A few more details on Magic Hat. They like to really promote the fact to their customers that they're utilizing their byproducts to brew more beer. They send 100% of the yeast, trub, hops, everything right down the floor drain. So this has also simplified their brewing operations process a little bit. There's not a lot of moving hoses around to divert different waste streams to different holding tanks. There's no pretreatment or screening in the process, and they're producing about 200 kilowatts of power through an on-site cogeneration system from the biogas for that. It's about enough to power 200 typical homes, to put it in another perspective. And to date, that system, the beer waste, has generated more than 2 gigawatt hours of power, which is hundreds of thousands of dollars of power that have come directly off their power bill. They also like to, there's a small amount of organic fertilizer that comes out on a quarterly basis from the digester, which they like to market locally as brewdew, and it's in high demand by local farmers in Vermont for their corn and bean crops, very high in slow-release nitrogen and phosphorus. Second case study is Dogfish Head. Dogfish Head had a little bit of a different challenge. They were hydraulically challenged. They were growing so quickly and had located in a town with an undersized wastewater treatment plant that they were in a mode where they having to truck and field apply hundreds of thousands of gallons of water. That was getting both costly and was beginning to impact their ability to produce beer, particularly in periods of rain. So in that case, we paired anaerobic digestion with the combination of ultrafiltration and reverse osmosis, which is giving back the brewery, or will give back the brewery, about 80% of its total wastewater flow back as drinking water standard water, which they will use for CIP, process water, boiler makeup, and chiller use. The savings are expected to be about 55 million gallons of water annually once they hit their brewery production targets. And that biogas created is actually much larger than the last brewery. They're going to generate about 1.2 megawatts of combined heat and power, which will be used back in the brewery. This system, because of the water reuse design, is very much of a kind of a closed loop. You can see the brewery on the center left. All of their wastewater is currently flowing into the digester, where it's being broken down by bacteria, creating biogas, which comes out in the red line and goes to an on-site generator. 100% of that water flow then comes out and goes through first the ultrafiltration system on the right side, where it removes, basically sends back to the digester any biological matter that might otherwise wash out. And that keeps the efficiency of the digester up at 99%. And then it goes through a final RO and chlorination step before it goes into storage tanks and is drawn on for processed water. So kind of summing up, what are some of the lessons learned both from these two sites and other breweries we've dealt with? The first is byproducts can limit your growth if you don't watch them carefully, so be cautious. And it is a technology that requires certain economies of scale. I gave you those benchmark figures that kind of are in the range. If you're in those ranges, it's worth a look. Location matters. There are some breweries that are located in high-capacity wastewater discharge plants and don't pay any surcharges. There are others like Dogfish and Magic Hat who are just in the wrong place and have to come up with alternatives. The right design that you choose has to be absolutely robust and can never put you in a position of having to impact your ability to brew beer. And lastly, it's not complicated. It's a lot like fermentation. So with that, I think I'm going to hand off.
Thank you all for joining us. Walker, thanks for the roast. I appreciate it. All right, so I'm going to cover just a small pilot, a six-month pilot, actually, on some of these technologies that Todd and EPA are essentially incorporating on the full scale. This is just documenting the process that we've tested out at the New Belgium Brewery in Fort Collins, Colorado, in preparation to implement at their their future brewery in Asheville, North Carolina. So that tiny box is the trailer where we housed all the equipment that we tested, and I'm going to briefly explain what we did in 20 seconds. It moves. There we go. Okay, so this tank is full of what we call hollow fiber membranes, which are just plastic. And essentially, we're taking every process waste from the brewery into a tank where we equalize it. We then send it to another tank where we let bacteria chew on it. We call that bugs. Bugs chew on it there, and we send it into this tank where we circulate the mud and try to make clean water through these membranes. That's really all we are trying to do. The process generates methane, and really we're just seeing how much mud can we push through this plastic. I won't belabor this, but these are just curves on the apparent costs for different types of treatment. This orange line is almost a neutralization or a no treatment line for a brewery that is growing to 450,000 barrels per year. This is a specific case study. The difference between this line and another UASB aerobic treatment is about $7 million after 10 years. So you can see this is another table that kind of helps you if you're a much smaller brewer to look at what you'd be paying per month based on BOD, TSS, and flow. Those are the three main criteria across the board. So why did New Belgium test an anaerobic MBR? That's the box with the plastic that I was explaining. Their new brewery, it's a confined area. It's very close to neighbors. It's close to it's alongside of a river. There's a highway that's looking down over the brewery. They wanted to really see what they could do in 97% less space than they did in Fort Collins. I'll explain those space constraints a little bit here. So Fort Collins Brewery, essentially 12 acres have been developed on their large parcel. 4.6% or 38% is their excellent wastewater treatment plant that they built back in 2004-2006. I'll zoom in on that site. Two operators run this facility. It's about 180,000 gallons per day throughput that they do there. That's at a 900,000 barrel per year rough range for the brew house. 200,000 square feet. Somebody keep that in mind, 200,000 square feet. So here in Asheville, there's the box that we're working with, 4,000 square feet. So of the whole brewery site, we're trying to use only 0.6% of the land and actually do a better job treating the water. Here's a comparison between the two sites. Just the digester, I drew a little black box around. That's the space of the entire facility in Asheville. So I'll get into the swamp here a little bit. I'm still talking the same process, but this is some of the pilot work that we've performed over the last 6 months. So if I didn't have 7 minutes, I would talk about every single chart on here. But you're lucky today. And we'll spend about a minute on this chart, see if I can explain it quickly. So essentially we took the bugs from the existing wastewater plant, put it into a bunch of jars, and spiked it with different feedstocks of just the wastewater, some with yeast, and then some with hops, three separate ones. The red is the yeast. We found that very quickly the bugs broke down the yeast. The next line here, the X is the mix. Sorry, it's just hops, no yeast. And this, we'll go all the way to the right. This is 10% hops, so this was basically our kill run. We know that hops inhibit the process a little bit. They slow down methanogens. Just like they slow down the souring of beer. It's the same idea. It inhibits microbial activity. So even the 10% mixture, which was supposed to be a kill run, here at 30 days, basically caught up. We broke it down. We turned it into methane. And you can see all the way at 60 days, we actually produced more gas from that. So this gave us confidence to test out treating hops in this facility, which can be traditionally difficult with anaerobic systems. Next set of results is how did we do with the plastic? Did we clog the plastic? What were the limits of it? So again, I have so much data. We can talk more if you have specific questions. Down here, in case it's hard to see, this is just our time frame. We basically started up near August, and we just shut down last week. For the first 3 months of the project, I didn't do a very good job of breaking the system.
This is transmembrane pressure, so it's essentially how much pressure did we have to push on that membrane to get liquid through the other side. And those big spikes are basically when we finally found something that broke or we finally had to backwash or clean the membranes. I told the manufacturer up front, if I don't see these spikes, I failed. So, but it did take me almost 4 months to break it, so that was positive. And it cleaned up immediately. And the last thing is, how did we do on meeting these surcharges with just essentially this single step? We have a digester and we have one barrier, which is this membrane. On the bottom is the TSS. It's essentially zero. We never got solids to go through the plastic. No surprise there. That's why it works well. And the blue is BOD or COD actually on this chart. And you can see even when we broke it, we were actually getting pretty excellent removal. So you'd be paying only a fraction of a no treatment cost. So essentially we found that that was a huge success. A little bit of the biogas. Everybody's talked about it, but you know, I think it's just good to remind ourselves that when you recover biogas, you're creating your own power. You're reusing the energy that you already bought in the grain. You know, that was grown by the sun. You trucked it in. If you send it down the pipe, you're just sending it somewhere else and having to truck more fossil fuels in. So as a piece of this pilot, what we did was just broke down the cost benefit of the use of the biogas. As I mentioned, adding yeast and hops to this gives us the potential to increase the amount of biogas that we're recovering at the plant. So perhaps if we can create a little bit more biogas, there's higher options. We can get into a larger CHP system. And we really looked at bio-CNG. Nobody's really done that much in the U.S. yet, and that's just actually creating compressed natural gas that you can put straight into a vehicle, haul beer away, fuel employees' vehicles, whatever you want to do. Just a summary, we found that this facility would produce 3 times more fuel than New Belgium would need to deliver beer to their transport to their distribution center, which is 10 miles away. So that's over 130,000 miles per year of trucking. They would have close to 400,000 just from using the bio-CNG generated from this facility. The summary, why did we pilot, what did we learn? A lot of operational confidence. We ran through holidays, we ran through times when we had to dump beer. We ran through a time when it didn't get above 0 degrees in Colorado for a week and we froze the biogas vent shut on the pilot. So we never had to re-inoculate the system. Essentially it kept running from day one. We got it back to work. We never had to add chemicals, as Todd mentioned. And we also learned quite a bit about the biogas. We learned whether there was value of adding yeast and hops to the system and whether we thought we could size our digester properly to handle those solids that take a little bit longer time to break down. So this is just a rendering of our 4,000 square feet. I'm actually lying. There's 4,000 square feet for a recycling bin. I took offense to it at first, but I realized it's all recycling, so it's okay. So I think December 2015, perhaps. I'm sure there's somebody here who's got an update on that from New Belgium, but that's when we'll plan to be online. And that's it. Thanks a lot.
Awesome. Thank you, gentlemen. So we still have about a half an hour left. We're going to have John over here, Todd in this corner. Eppa will be in the back left of the room, and I'll send Tim to the back right. Please seek them out. Extract as much information from them as you possibly can now. That's the whole idea behind sort of changing the dynamic around this presentation. And before we head off into breakout groups, just one more time, please, for all four gentlemen.